When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You have to believe that you can do something that nobody else has done. And somehow that concept has to become reality.
Somebody's got to make the play to stop the threat. That last run, in fact, again, they push the pile with the first. And the pass picks off. It picks off of David Harris, who gets away from Brady. What a turn of events. Now being chased out by Crapper at the 10-yard line. Suddenly the 10th defense responds when it looks like the Patriots were ready to drive it right down the field. 37, Matt Moore.
You're listening to No Fly Zone Radio with Victor Green.
Welcome to the No Fly Zone Radio Show, all the way from across the pond. Here are your hosts, Biff Sweeney and Richard Hindley.
Welcome to No Fly Zone Radio. This is episode number 173. I'm your host, Biff Sweeney. I'm joined here by my good friend and draft tech analyst, Rich Hindley. How's it going, Rich?
Yeah, we've just beat the Bills, so amazing.
A lot better than last week. A lot better than last week.
Crazy good.
Yeah, to be honest, it was night and day. Like, Zach was good. The offensive line in the fourth quarter, I thought, was outstanding, especially in the run game. Jets, just to let anybody know that didn't realize, Jets bet the Bills 20-17. I thought they've done a great job on Josh Allen as well. Like, I'm a big fan of Josh Allen, even when he was coming out of Wyoming. Some people were telling me he was the next Hackenberg. But no, he's big and he's powerful. He's got serious arm on him. But like that, he said it himself last week that his accuracy wasn't very good in the first 2 years. And That's spot on. But the freaking dog in the bathroom.
Actually, an interesting stat came up during the game, if you remember, when he kind of compared Josh Allen's first 19 games to Zach Wilson's, and the numbers were almost identical. So, you know, when you look at kind of the panic surrounding some of the fan base when they're talking about Zach Wilson, it kind of just highlights kind of how silly that is. Like, you know, you can't kind of expect a guy like Wilson coming in from his program with the kind of development that he needed to go through to be a superstar after 19 games. Yeah, we probably would like to see a little bit more. But for how the team is set up at the minute, I think the more kind of mistake-free games he plays, the better chance we have of winning. And like, for the most part, he has played mistake-free football this year.
Yeah, that's why, like, fans were fanatics. That's what fans stand for, is fanatics. Like that, we all want to win it every week. We don't want to go to what we went through last week, when we should have beat the New England Patriots, because facts, New England Patriots aren't that good. But to be honest, after the first quarter, I was like, oh, here we go. Josh Allen was running all over the Jets at that stage. But look, the Jets hung in. I thought was very, very good. I thought it was the best game the last two seasons with the Jets as coach, with the coaches. I thought, like I said, the offensive line in the fourth quarter was excellent. Defense was absolutely lights out, savage.
Like, I think for me, how we finished the game was the most pleasurable part, because that's a team that's confident. You know, they took all the time off the clock. They ran the ball down their throats. And like, you know, they could see the Bills couldn't stop them, so they kept doing it. And, you know, that's what you should do in scenarios like that, is you kind of stranglehold the Bills and, you know, run down the clock, win the game, and, you know, move on to the following week. It's a kind of very professional kind of attitude, which is great to see, I think, considering exactly where we came from last year. You know, like, we had the 3rd overall pick last year. I think we'll be looking in the maybe in the mid-20s by the looks of things. I think the growth there, like, you know, we penciled in the Green Bay game a couple of weeks ago as a game to make a statement against a big sort of quarterback and kind of a big franchise. I kind of wasn't expecting this statement so early, but what a statement. You know, like, you kind of look at, had we have beaten the Patriots last week, we'd actually be probably the number one, not number two seed this week.
Yeah.
You know, like, to move up that high in the AFC rankings in a year is kind of a, you know, it's a serious job done by all behind, like, I suppose, the court, and shall we say, head coach, coordinators, GM. You know, you have to kind of give props to all those guys to get that kind of mentality and attitude where, you know, like, a team with the 3rd overall pick is going up against probably the Super Bowl favorites and running the ball down their throat for 7 minutes. You know, yeah. That's an amazing job.
Like, you have to give props as well to Joe Douglas. Like, the last 3 years, like, he's built something. Like, go back to the last draft haul. It looks like every draft pick he's had has been a hit. Like, I'm not going to say question marks, but we're not seeing Ruckert at the moment because they're giving him time to grow. Like, he's not going to do much on the field at the moment. So I'm looking to next year to see some him. Now, go to the year before, he's got players that are after coming out of that draft that are hitting. You go to the year before that, we've had Kai Becton, he's had his injuries. He's still on the roster. He's to come back next season. They're impressed with him at the moment. He's working out in Florham Park. You've got Denzel Mims that has been making mistakes, that has been putting the bomb squad. He's back. The last 3 games, you know, he's performing. He's doing his job, and he's getting better each week. Like, there near the end of the game, he had one big catch in, I think it was in their 20-yard line, and it was an impressive catch because I think there was 3 defenders on him at that stage. I think he's blocking well. He's doing really well for the run game. So, yeah, I'm impressed so far with what Joe Douglas has brought to the team.
I think, like, when you highlight Mims there as well, Ian, you have to maybe give props to the coaches, you know, because, like, he's one of those guys that kind of handed in a trade like request and wanted to leave, felt like he wasn't getting a chance. And yeah, like, that kind of, like, I suppose in a way, certainly put him in the doghouse with a lot of fans, but I'm sure with his own coaches would have been the same type of thing. So he had to kind of crawl out of there as well. And,
yeah,
you know, even either the 1st or 2nd play in the game where Zach Wilson tried to hit him with a long bomb down the sideline. Like, it was a tough catch to make, but how you have made it, like, it was, would have been an amazing play. I know he didn't, but, like, to be even getting as close as he did for that ball, like, kind of shows a bit more of a confidence. And, yeah, again, like, we have news this week that Elijah Moore is going to be played predominantly a lot more in the slot now. And I was kind of, like, thinking as well as to why his targets were suffering. And if he played a lot to the left-hand side of Zach Wilson, I would suggest that would be probably a major reason, as in Zach not throwing across his body, because when Zach took off, he always took off right. So if Moore's on the left-hand side of the field, he's less likely to throw back across it. You know, I'm not sure if that is the case, but, like, with, I suppose, just a few guys missing, it could have been possible that Moore was lining up a lot more on the left-hand side. So when Zach was taken off, he then became not an option, you know? And maybe the slot moving him in there where he's doing a few crossing routes and stuff like that should kind of help increase, production for him moving forward.
The other thing is that nobody's mentioning is Barrios. The way he's performing, he's overshadowing Moore at the moment as well. So he's getting a lot of the targets because, like that, he's catching the ball and he's making moves, he's making plays. And going back to Denzel Mims, Rich, there's not many players that come out of Baylor that actually produce in the NFL. So to see a guy, especially wide receivers, come out of Baylor, struggle for 3 seasons, and now he's starting to, you know, he's starting to show something. So, which Corey Davis...
You can back as well, Ian. We had a lesson we learned ourselves when we were talking before about Brian Winters, the guard we drafted a good couple of years ago from Kansas State. Like, for the first 3 years, he was horrendous. Oh, and yeah. Then year four, like, he kind of earned himself a new deal with how he played. And he was, like, a pretty, pretty good player that year. You know, like, we kind of forget sometimes that players take time to come into the league and adjust and, you know, be a professional and understand that it's a job and what's required to make it. You know, like, you can kind of come in with the wrong sort of attitude, as in, like, I could, like, overly confident, shall we say, and then it can, like, the reality can kind of hit you like a ton of bricks. And I think, you know, it's probably more those kind of lower school prospects, I guess, that might have the biggest change, like, from the higher programs like Alabama, LSU. I would assume they're probably a lot more professionally ran than the lower schools, like BYU or Wyoming and all of those other places. You know, that's not a knock on them, but just in terms of, like, the step up, you know, in mindsets of how, like, things are done, all of that type of stuff. It can, you know, it can take a little while to get used to the professional side of the sport. And then also the step up in competition, you know, like, people kind of forget that. That can take a while to, like, understand how you've been marked, what type of coverages you're seeing, what defenders can usually do to try and box you out of your play or take you off your route. All of that type of stuff takes time to learn. And, you know, like, I suppose what we kind of forget is that we can kind of ask as the players to come in and develop and, you know, have a good attitude about it. I think Mims' attitude has changed for the positive over the last year. And, yeah, his development looks to be, you know, starting to move in the right direction.
Yeah, the other thing is, Rich, I think fans forget, going back 8-10 years ago, any wide receivers really coming out of college, it took them literally 3 years to click. I remember a guy coming out of, I think it was Clemson, drafted by Houston. He's with Arizona at the moment. Yeah, took him 3 years to actually produce. And now he's one of the best in the NFL. So, yeah, that's why they call us fanatics, our fans fanatics, because, yeah, we want production straight away. We want to win straight away. But, yeah, moving on to the defense, and, you know, you look at Sauce, an awful lot of people were disappointed we didn't take an offensive tackle. We took Sauce. He's top-ranked rookie of the year so far. He's absolutely producing, and I think between him and Wilson, they're so infectious. And seeing them on the sideline, seeing that Mims catch, and you see Wilson running over, jumping into the air, like, that's fantastic. And I think that's helping Mims as well, and other players.
I think even, like, Ian, if you look at the group of cornerbacks that we have now, like, we've got DJ Reed, who's quality. I think he's, I think Sauce Gardner is the number one ranked corner in the league at the moment. I think DJ Reed's ranked number 5. I just read something like that. I didn't fully go into the article because there's so many of them. But you also have Brandon Echols, who's a year or two player, and Michael Carter, the second, I'm going to say. I'm not sure it's Michael Carter, the second, also playing in the cornerback position. And, like, you know, like, when we did this show back in maybe April or May of last year or after the end of the season, that cornerback group, like, well, we had a lot of hope for its potential, Bryce Hall included in that as well at that time. you know, there was no real sort of reliance, as in, like, you know, you could pin your hat on that group, and there was a lot of uncertainty. I think it's probably one of the best cornerback groupings in the NFL now, just the way they're playing. It's the transformation, like, is amazing when you add those two guys to it. Because, yeah, like, Echols, I have to say, has been no slouch this year as well. And Carter showing up lots of times with good coverage too. Like, they are kind of playing that Rex Ryan style, I guess, if you get me, where, you know, they're asking their corners to play man and, like, battle and, you know, and that's what's given them the opportunity to then rush four rather than blitz the whole time. And, yeah, while we haven't, I guess, we've handled the run a lot better over the last couple of weeks too. So, yeah, like, I think that's a lot of it is down to the corners and the trust in them now that the team has, that they can all kind of be comfortable as in that the coverage, they're going to cover them for long enough for the four that they're sending to get home or make a big impression on the play. So, yeah, it's, as I said, the pass rush is great, but the corners on top of the job they're doing, like, you know, individually and collectively, like, the impact they're having on the Jets pass rush, I think, is very positive too.
Yeah, here's another one for you. An awful lot of Jets fans wanted Thibodeau, the defensive end from Oregon, and I stood up and I said no, I didn't like him. I still don't like him. I wanted JJ, and people were laughing at me for saying draft him in the top 10. Now he's producing. Like, that was a serious sack on Josh Allen, chasing down the sideline and absolutely upended him. The other thing is, going back a couple of seasons, and he's producing now, his Hoff, the defensive end. I was absolutely shouting from the hilltops for the Jets to draft that guy, because he was my guy that year. The Jets picked it up in an undrafted free agency, which, thank God it did. Stroke of luck. So, yeah, the Jets, like, fair play to Joe Douglas, the work he's done the last 3 years. I think
it's kind of like a closer, even if you get me, Nelly. Like, you're bringing Huff in a lot more in the fourth quarter, and you're just like letting him off the leash. That's kind of how he's playing, you know. And like, he may only have maybe 16, 18 snaps in the game, but you're probably going to see an impact from him in half of them. Like, whether it be where he actually gets a pressure or a sack, or, you know, like, he's taken up two guys and somebody else is getting the benefit from it. So his play's been outstanding. I think he's a free agent as well, coming up. So,
is he not? You know,
definitely looking at him. I'm not sure now.
Anyway, no. Yeah, and the other thing is, with the player Wolf, he's basically after forcing Joe Douglas to make that trade last week to get rid of your man from Brian from Houston. And like that, you've got Rankins. He's starting to juice now, which is great. But the other thing is, he's out for, I think, 4 weeks now. So he'll have this week, he'll have next week, and then it'll be 2 weeks. Because the Jets, like that, were on the bye week. So you're going to have a lot of players coming back from injury. And I think it's a good thing the Jets have their bye week now.
I agree, yeah. I think particularly after, like, we're in a 6-3, you know, the division is really, really competitive this year. Like you said, Edward, about the Patriots not being a good team. I kind of disagree.
I think they're shit. See what happens when you talk about the New England Patriots. You start talking like a robot.
Sorry?
I said when you start talking about the New England Patriots, you start to talk like a robot with the internet connection.
He doesn't like me talking about it. Very good.
No.
Yeah, I think if you want, like, to look at, like, how would you say, where we are in terms of the division, like, our record, record within the division. Like, and you know, like the team, I'm sure are going to be sitting down talking about what has happened so far and what's to come and where they envisage going and all that type of stuff, who we feel we can, you know, give games to. And I'm sure they'll look at the remaining schedule and think we can give every one of them a game. Like, I think, you know, if we win four more games, I think we're in the playoffs with 10 wins. And I'm looking through the last couple of games, like, I have a feeling like that we could win seven of them, you know? Well,
I'm just looking at
seven games left, five of them. But, like,
here, I'll run through them, right? When we return from the bye week, we're on the road to the Patriots. But then we're back at home to the Bears. Then we're on the road to the Vikings. We're on the road to the Bills. We're home to the Lions. We're home to the Jags. We're on the road to Seattle. And we're on the road finishing up with the Dolphins.
There's a lot of winnable games in there, Ian. Like you mentioned Chicago. Yeah, they're a good side. I think they're good on offense and they've got a quarterback.
You look at Jacksonville
again. Yeah, like I think so. You know, like I look at the most of our home games as almost like wins there. I think we've Chicago, Jacksonville, and another kind of easier-ish team.
I'd say Jaguars, Lions.
The Lions, yeah.
That's the Bears.
Even the Vikings, even though like they're 7-1, for me they're kind of one of the out their teams. They've had a lot of games in the division, and the division is pretty weak this year, so they got a lot of wins against, for me, weakish teams. So, yeah, I think
I actually think the Jets, like two on road games, Jets have a chance of winning. I think the Jets could have a chance of winning in Gillette Stadium against the Patriots and in Seattle. I think they're two games that I would circle that we could win on the road.
Yeah. And then, as I said, like Miami, we've had a good record down there. They'll be probably looking to take a bit of revenge for losing without Tua against us up in MetLife. So I think that's another game that they could kind of nearly try too hard, like put too much pressure on themselves to win. But yeah, I think look, the Jets look as a team like they're ready to compete with everybody. The way they're playing in the fourth quarter, how they're scoring points in the fourth quarter and ending games, you know, it's kind of putting them in the hunt when you look through that list of being in the hunt of winning in every one of those games. Like, would you be surprised now that we could go to Buffalo and win there? I wouldn't. Yeah. You know, like you just don't know. It's any given Sunday too. That's a given. But it's just, yeah, I think that there is a lot of winnable games out there for us with how we're playing and the belief the team are showing. So, yeah.
And the other thing is, like, Max Williams is due to come back as well. That's more help for the offensive line. And Michael Clemens, he's flying under the radar, having a decent season for a fourth round defensive end.
Yeah, 100%.
Excuse me. Yeah, quick question, just veering off the Jets and the NFL at the moment. What's your thoughts on the season so far for college football?
Honestly, at the minute now, Ian, I haven't really watched that much of it other than like kind of more the highlight programs as to just what's happening. And yeah, it kind of seems to be like a little bit of a change in the guard there this year. There's a lot of, I suppose, the usual teams that are look to be faltering. Alabama doesn't look the same this year. And then, yeah, like I suppose like Georgia, you look at them being that sort of yardstick of a team again. Tennessee's coming back to a bit of form as well. And I haven't really looked at what our potential needs in the draft could be next year. I'm quite, because we're doing so well in the seasoning and it's not the usual, I kind of usually do that stuff to take me mind off with how bad we're doing. So yeah, I haven't really been like engrossed in process. Injuries the O-line has had shows the kind of depth that's required now in today's NFL to, you know, keep those trenches your place of strength. And yeah, like I think you look at even against the Bills, that was kind of the case. You know, we won though that game in the trenches, both on the defensive side of the football, well, front four been so effective getting to Josh Allen now. He did run a couple of nice plays back. You know, they were quite frustrating to watch, like the run end of things when he took off. But like even if you look at like in the fourth quarter, like the O-line, they started to dominate too. Like, you know, they could run at will. And yeah, I think if we keep those sort of trenches strong moving forward, there's every chance we'll be in with a chance of winning every game and win quite a lot of them given the mentality that this team has. You're on mute, Darian.
Apologies. Yeah, no, this season, though, I've been watching an awful lot of college football. But like that, I said it at the start of the season that Alabama is not going to be the Alabama it used to be. I honestly thought they were going to be poor this year. Coaching at Alabama has been really poor. I don't think the standard of player is there like they used to have. I think coaching around college football has taken a step back. And looking at the draft next 2023, I don't think it's going to be as stocked as what it used to be, decent players. For me, like, it's going to be linebacker safety and offensive line for me. That's what I'm going to be watching. I've been watching an awful lot of center. Middle linebacker, and my guy so far this year is Boomer Poole from Arkansas. Like, he's slated to go into round 5 or 6, but I think he's an absolute baller. That's my shout out so far this year, is he's my guy, Boomer Poole.
I just as you're talking about middle linebacker, our very own CJ Mosley, I think he's less than a $6 million cap hit. He's already 88 tackles this year and playing outstanding football, like Pro Bowl level football.
Yeah.
But as I was kind of doing a little bit of like swatting around this week, I noticed next year he's due to be earning over $21 million. Now,
yeah.
For me, that's like kind of crazy money, but like he's playing crazy good. Is the kind of a happy medium there where he can take maybe a bit of a pay cut and open up a bit more cap for us next year, or like would it be a case of where it's like we kind of have to cut him like and move on because just that figure you can't justify?
Here's the other thing is, Rich, I think Fant is due, I think, $11 million next year or else he's a free agent. Then you've got McGovern, center, he's due in around 10 or 11 million at center, and he's 29 at the moment. You've got Quinn Williams, he's due big payday as well. So Jets, like cap-wise next year, they're going to have to do some work or let some guys go and absolutely hit the draft again, big time. Something to look forward to.
Yeah, like I noticed as well, the likes of DJ Reed and CJ, the two tight ends actually are due quite big pay increases next year, and Whitehead the same. So, yeah, like we may be a little bit more strapped for cash than we think cap-wise. And that's why when I just seen how good CJ Mosley is playing, and he's like, you know, he's playing absolutely outstanding. But yeah, I think even at that, I think like, you know, maybe 16, 17 million max is the most you could probably justify paying the best middle linebacker in the league. And you know, Mosley's setting up there this year with how he's playing.
Yeah, exactly. He's been lights out. I know he doesn't have this speed like Sailing and Williams at linebacker has, but like that, he can read the game. He knows where to go, knows where to stand, and knows where to be. He's an intelligent linebacker. That's what you need. And he's a leader, a big-time leader. You need that in the middle of your defense. But like that, I wouldn't mind getting another young guy in there that's explosive. Smallwood, he's shown the odd flash, but he's no, like, he should be on the scene at the moment, the middle of year two.
Just on, like, the middle of the defense, as you put it, you've got the season Quinn and Williams is having, like, absolutely, like, you know, I've certainly questioned him on the show as regards to how good he has been. But
I haven't.
At the minute, he's just...
just saying, I haven't.
Tearing it up. Right, no, that's fine. Yeah. You know, like, I need to be impressed, and he has impressed me this year. That's something serious. Again, I suppose the same type of question. Like, I think we've definitely found ourselves certainly a top three at the position. Like, I think... top five at the position, though, you can't even argue. But
yeah,
just in terms of like a new long-term deal for him, what type of figures would you be okay with spending on Quinnen and keeping him on the roster?
It's going to have to be between 20 and 25. That's why he's going to end up getting, I'd say, 25.
Yeah,
if Mosley's going to get 21... he's definitely going to get 25. And he's young.
Yeah, like, I think that could be the, you know, I don't know, like, for me, I think Joe Douglas has to have a figure in mind, and by the looks of things, he's kind of stuck to that figure on quite a few occasions. Like, even, like, I suppose the figures he brought Barrios back on last year was quite team-friendly figures. Yeah. Quincy Williams, he's on $2.5 million this year after signing a new deal. You know, like, he's got guys to kind of, like, play ball with the team in terms of keeping the cap figures down. I just kind of hope, you know, that, like, as good as, like, Quincy Williams, well, as good as Quinn Williams is, playing that position, that, you know, he doesn't price himself out of, like, yeah, like, staying number one, but number two also out of, like, giving us the opportunity to add, you know, a better supporting cast with a bit more cap left over.
Yeah, the only thing working in his favour is the roster is so young. That's the only thing that's working in his favour. The other thing is, do the Jets then turn around and let one of the tight ends walk, and then put in the new tight end? Like, you've got your boy there as well. You've got Whitehead. Like, Whitehead has been okay so far. Like, there is players on this roster that you could let go and you wouldn't even think twice about.
No, I get that there, like, even from the tight end perspective, like, maybe the plan this year was to bring in two free agent tight ends and a rookie, and then over the course of this year to pick the one free agent tight end that fits best with the team, like, chemistry-wise, get rid of the other one, and then bring in your kind of year two guy to replace that second one, you know?
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, Conklin is clicking and has chemistry there with Zach. Uzama is 31 now. He's in his 30s.
Yeah.
So maybe he comes back at a cheaper deal.
He's come on a bit, like, in terms of into the game plan. His blocking has actually been very, very good too, and I've been watching him. And yeah, like, so far he's shown kind of reliable hands in the last couple of weeks too, when he has been targeted, and there's been a few nice plays he's had. So yeah, like, he's getting a little bit more involved with the offense. But yeah, I think for me, Conklin is the kind of real plus there at the tight end position this year.
Yeah. What's your thoughts, actually? Question. What's your thoughts on the tight end position if you were to look at one in round one? I'm not saying the Jets are going to do it or want the Jets to do it. If you're a GM, would you spend a first round pick on a tight end?
After maybe pick 20, yes, I probably would. But before that, no. I think very much like the Jamal Adams scenario, like when you're a top five pick, like, I think Atlanta's going to have the same issue with Pitts there. He's going to want to be paid like he's a top five pick, not like he's a tight end. Just like, you know, Jamal Adams wanted to be paid like a top five pick because he came in and performed from that spot. And it was too much for the safety position. I think that's the trouble you face with drafting players. You don't want to really pay, or positions you don't want to really pay much if they do walk out, you know. And that's why I think those top 20 positions should be more quarterback, tackles, wide receivers, corners. You know, that should be the because they're the pain when.
Yeah, why I'm asking is that, like, the Detroit Lions selected Hawkins in round one a couple of years ago. They traded him away last week. And then you look down through the years, the amount of first round picks at tight end, how many have actually worked out compared to picks after the first round? Like, you look at Kelce. Kelce was a second round pick, a third round pick. You've got Gronk, I don't think was a first round pick.
Hernandez the same.
Yeah, and even the guy at Andrews at Baltimore, he was a mid round draft pick. You've got you've got the guy that wrote Penn State that was selected, I think, second round by the Steelers. There's so many big time ends that don't go in first round. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Anyway, guys, that brings us to the end of the show. We're also, just to let people know, we're also on the sports social network, so you can get us there. It's Slán for me.
And Slán for me.
Yeah, catch you next week, right, guys? Sports Social Podcast Network.